Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes here in the main feed. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Sondra. Hi Sondra, how are you?
Hi Kenny, I'm doing pretty well. I'm having a lovely time in Breckenridge. I went on a really short hike yesterday with my family and we saw some really pretty scenery and mountains and stuff, and it's a cool little city, so I'm enjoying myself. And I'm getting more used to the altitude a little bit so I can like breathe slightly better now. It kicked my ass for the first couple of days. It was really bad. But yeah, I'm having a great time out here. How are you?
I'm good. I'm trying to duck about all the Twitter wars that are going on right now.
I know, like, right? I feel like, God, I'm dodging bullets. Everyone's shooting out there.
Yeah, like, so here's today's just brief rant. So there's this thing that happens on Twitter and I don't understand it. Because I'm a ranty person, as we know, and I will rant about something that I don't like. But I don't understand the idea of liking a tweet about someone you don't like that is perpetuating the idea that they said something that they did not say. I don't like that. So, like, obviously, look, I like football. I know several people on Twitter who, if there's anything anti-Rangers and they're a Celtic fan, they like it. Or the other way around, I'm just like, get life. Like, grow up. Like, just communicate with the world in a positive way. But anyway, so today, this moron in America, absolute moron, who I won't name because what's the point of giving him attention, was, he said something. Let me just like read the tweet out, because I want to read the moronicness of it without giving his name away. So he tweeted out, Meltzer once questioned if Roman Reigns actually had leukemia. Fuck him and all who ride with him. I don't forget or forgive that. Well, you stupid person, he never said that. So you're a liar. But what this man did was he tweeted that out, and he gets like 450 likes and 140 retweets, and people who I know liked it and stuff, and I'm just like, well, like, it doesn't bother me if you don't like him, but to say someone questions someone having leukemia is a very different thing than not liking them. And like, I listen to Meltzer regularly, and I get people who don't like him, or I get people who don't like his coverage or whatever, but to even endorse something where you're saying someone questioning someone had leukemia, like, that's a big statement to make. And I think that people should grow up and really check sources, because if you don't, then you're kind of just as bad as the guy posting this by endorsing it, in my eyes. So
I remember some people questioning if Roman Reigns had leukemia, and I don't think Dave Meltzer was one of them. I don't know. Like, I just, in my opinion, like, why even bother tweeting something like that when it was so long ago and it didn't even happen? And like, I don't know. I don't understand the whole like mudslinging culture of constantly like tweeting stuff about something someone did a long time ago. Like, unless they're like a genuinely terrible person who did terrible things and are getting back into people's good graces, like, tweet all the shit about Louis C.K. you want to, because he's a cretin. But I don't know. Like, stuff like that just kind of, notice it as much as you do, because I just sort of ignore things a lot. And also, I haven't been on Twitter because I'm on vacation.
But if it was true, sling away. If you want to be like, remember he did this? If he did it. But, like, it's just, like, it's, like, because what he actually did say, and worded it very badly, because it's Dave Meltzer, and that's sometimes what he does.
That's what he does,
and yeah, there are reasons for that, which I'm not going to go into, which, read between lines, if you listen to him. But he was talking about the diagnosis, because the diagnosis happened, and then they did a radio show, and he was sort of talking about recovery times, and he talked to people, and what the recovery times were, and what he was trying to say in a very bad way was, Roman Reigns has leukemia, he's going to be off, we don't know how severe it is, so we don't really know when he's going to be back. So, you know, he could be back in 3 months, could be something minor that they're able to take care of, it might be something that's major where he's out for a year, we just don't know. That was kind of what he was saying. But there's just this idea of, like, I'm going to go on social media, and because I don't like someone, I'll just post this fake narrative. And it's so dangerous. It's so dangerous to just, like, post false information about people all the time.
Like that type of thing can ruin people.
It can, and it's and then the people who help to ruin it just kind of slink away and pretend that they endorsed it. Like, just sad. But at the same time, there are fun versions of the Twitter wars which happen, which Seth Rollins got on Twitter this weekend, Sondra. Seth Rollins got on Twitter.
Seth Rollins has definitely been on Twitter this weekend, hasn't he?
So obviously Seth has not really been someone who's been that vocal on Twitter about anything that people have been talking about. But basically the gist of what it was at the weekend he said, trying to find it.
Didn't it start with his tweet that said best pro wrestling on the planet or something like that?
So WWE had put a tweet out saying WWE superstars looking to kick butt and take names at Stomping Ground. He then retweeted it and said best pro wrestling on the planet, period. And then he tweeted again, said doubling down, best pro wrestling on the planet. See that cruiserweight triple threat? And that's just one night, one match among the many. Find anyone else alive who does what I do as well as I do it, as often as I do it, you can't. This brought out Will Ospreay, who said, I'm alive. Then Rollins said, ah, I'm sorry, little guy. We already have a better version of you here, and he just won his first US title tonight. Congrats, Ricochet. Keep working hard, though, buddy. And, somebody else had said to him, Seth, I love you, but seriously, dude, dial it down a notch. And he said, nah, dog, let me dial it up. I've sat back and watched Idiots with No Clue talk poorly about the place I dedicate my life to every hour of every day. The level I perform at on constant is untouchable. Time to let them know. And then Wade Keller had said, this isn't a good tone at all if he wants to get people who love good wrestling, regardless of brand, to feel goodwill towards WWE's strengths and its vocal leader. Buddy, little guy, disappointing and character-defining condescension. This is heel Corbin promo content. And Seth came back and said, I don't care about goodwill, Wade. I care about respect. And if some kid who thinks he's got it all figured out wants to step to me, then he's going to get patted on the head and sent in his way, and so will you. And then he also went on a Sports Illustrated podcast and just kind of basically said that he wasn't a huge fan of Moxley going on podcasts and basically slating WWE and all that kind of stuff after they'd given him all these opportunities. So let's tackle the Twitter thing first. What did you make of the Twitter situation of Seth coming out and defending WWE and defending his position, defending the wrestling they put on, and I guess the responses and backlash from it?
I mean, if you're Seth Rollins, I understand his position, right? Because WWE is not very popular right now at all. WWE gets lambasted on Twitter and all forms of social media pretty constantly at this point. And it must be very frustrating to, if he's really enjoying his job, which it seems like he does, and if he's doing very well there. I mean, he's making millions of dollars. And his, you know, partner is also making millions of dollars, right? Or at least like a million. I don't know how much they're making. I don't really look at their salaries. But they're making a lot of money to be in WWE and to be on top of WWE. And so if you have that dream job, and this has always been your dream, and you're living it, and you're doing your best work, and you're really like putting everything you have into making WWE a good product and leading it well as, you know, the Universal Champion and all that kind of stuff, of course he's going to defend WWE because he has to, right? Like, I mean, I've worked places that are unpopular before that I hated, and so I wasn't going to defend them, but I knew people who loved their jobs in those same places that defended the company all the time, and it baffled me because I was like, they're horrible and run by cretins. But okay, like, if you're happy with your job and you love what you do and you think that they do a lot of good things, and WWE does do some good things, they do a lot of bad things too. If they, you know, if he's happy in his position, then I understand why he's defending it. I think it's kind of ridiculous that he's just like, you know, nothing else is good. I mean, a guy that came from the indies, right? But I mean, I get it from his perspective. And also, it's getting people talking about him. It's making Seth Rollins interesting, even if he does come across as quite heelish in the tweets. Like, I don't know. It's fascinating. And actually, it's shining more of a light on some independent performers who've gotten involved in the whole drama. So in a way, he's almost helping out the other companies, too, because then people are like, hey, no, this person's really great, or this person's really great. I don't know. It's an interesting approach to take, but I don't think WWE is going to be upset about it, right? Because he's defending WWE and he gets to do what he loves and he's making tons of money. So I get it. I mean, I disagree with him. I don't think WWE is the best wrestling on the planet, but I guess it depends what you look for. And I think he has a point about the grueling travel schedule. I don't think anyone else does what he does exactly like that, right? Because no one else is doing the crazy like house show schedule and all that kind of stuff. So I think that might be part of where he's coming from with that. He didn't say you know, the house show schedule and stuff. I mean, I think he and Will Ospreay were going back and forth about like number of matches they had on pay-per-view shows and stuff, but that's not counting the house show travel schedule, which is grueling for WWE performers. So I get it from Seth's perspective. I think he looks like a little bit of a dick, but at the same time, it must be frustrating to have people constantly just saying that your product sucks.
Yeah, well, it's funny because like you say, it depends on what you like, right? It depends on what you like or who you follow. And I think if you're an AEW fan, I mean, you know, because now we have to bracket everyone in separate things. But like, if you're an AEW fan or an indie fan or whatever, or a disenfranchised WWE fan, I guess is the best way to put it, then mm-hmm. you're just like all over this, like he's a dick and look what he's doing and blah, blah, blah. I think the first thing to bear in mind is it is Twitter.
Yep.
So like, I think he's working you a little bit.
A little bit.
But I also think for some WWE fans who, and you know, people don't like to admit that's the thing, but there are people who just watch WWE. I've tried to kind of get this across more and more in the last few months, and that I think part of the reason AEW has a big shot is because there aren't a lot of people who really like independent wrestling, right? They don't really, that's not their thing. They prefer big budget, glitz, glamour, performance, and nobody else has really offered that, but now AEW seem to be offering that. So now there's a real potential clash of people's times or people's investment where they go. But if you're a WWE fan and that's all that you follow, there is a part of them that must be going, finally fucking someone's sticking up for us. You know, because all they've been hearing for the last 6 months, whatever, has just been pot shot at WWE, pot shot at WWE, pot shot at WWE, about everything. And nobody really who's kind of big in WWE has really been kind of responding to it or coming out in sort of any forceful way and saying, you know, fuck you, like, we're good, or whatever. And I think that the idea, look, do I agree with everything that Seth Rollins said? No. But I do kind of like the fact that he's saying something. Like, I kind of like the idea that he's voicing himself a little bit, because, like, the idea that, like, a fan will tell him, I think it was, I'm trying to see the guy who said to him, you know, Seth, I like you, but blah, 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 blah. I'm trying to see what the guy does, because he's not a wrestler, I don't think. Jamal Yassim Eagle. He is a co-creator at Molly Danger, which is a superhero thing. He's an artist, right? So he's not a wrestler, is the point. There must be a thing when, like, if you're Seth Rollins, right, and you essentially have given up your life, like, your life is completely WWE because you're the champion, you're doing 4 or 5 days in a row, whatever. To have somebody who maybe doesn't know what they're talking about be like, here's what I think you should do on Twitter. I get why sometimes you might just want to go, shut up. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you might just want to. And, like, yeah, and then, but I mean, it's classic Wade Keller to be like, I think the nuance of the character, you know, that's such a Wade Keller approach to things. Like, that's how he covers wrestling. And some people love that. Some people love to dissect every minutia of things. And that's what he does. So that's why he obviously said what he said. I don't really get why anyone would be really annoyed. And I was reading, I think it was Sean Campbell had said it, or somebody had said it on Facebook today. They were saying, you know, I'm all in for this. Let's have more people just like going at it and stuff, because it's at least it's somebody speaking up. At least it's somebody being kind of interesting. It's not just and you know, like, because, and then somebody asked Cody, you know, who do you think's better, Rollins or Ospreay? And he, of course,
he said, I fought both and they're both wonderful, or something like that, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Which is exactly what he should say. Why would he ever, at a point where he is about to want you to spend money on a product that he is helping create and start a company, why would he ever try and choose a side, you know? It's like,
yeah, that would be stupid.
It's like when people say, you know, because somebody today, when I kind of retweeted Ryan Satin had said something I thought was quite good, when he was like, you know, I used to watch The Walking Dead, I loved it, and then I just, you know, for a long time felt really kind of like, I'm paraphrasing, but like, he just felt like he wasn't interested anymore, right? He was like, I don't like mm-hmm. it anymore, I don't watch it. So I decided to just, like, move on. He was like, maybe that's how some people should be about certain wrestling things, than just, like, atting the cast or whatever and giving them shite about it or whatever. And I just kind of retweeted about this. I liked it. And then this guy had messaged me and said, you know, you're not taking into account, you know, the fact that in The Walking Dead, they don't do to people's mental health what WWE do to their wrestlers. And I'm going, well, I mean, that's a different discussion, but, like, you know, that would all be hearsay, because we don't really know about any of that stuff. I mean, we know, we've seen stuff with Sasha Banks putting stuff on Twitter, but we don't really know any real situation. When he was talking about that, one of the examples that I gave was, well, guys like Cody and Moxley and stuff, they decided to leave because they thought they could have a better career elsewhere, and they've been proven right. And you can do that. So I didn't really get why it became such a big story. I mean, don't get me wrong, I lapped all of it up and had all the
figures. I love the drama. I live for the drama. The Twitter drama has been more interesting than WWE programming lately.
Yeah, 100%. So. There's like a moment, I mean, for anybody who's British or Sandra, in Gavin and Stacey, which is a sitcom in the UK, there's a moment where like one of the characters is going into labour, and the mum of one of the characters is just really excited, but they're trying to find somebody to go and see the baby getting delivered. And the husband's like, why are you so excited? She was like, I just love the drama. And that's what I'm like. I'm like, I just love it. Like, give me more of it. So that's the story for now. And do you know what? I can kind of get on board with Seth Rollins, but a bit like, fuck you guys.
And honestly, like his comments about John Moxley in the interview as well, like people are questioning their friendship and saying like, oh, he's supposed to be your road brother and you are saying bad things. He didn't really say anything that egregious about Moxley, right? Like he didn't say like he's a terrible person or I don't like that guy or anything like that.
He said something like if you think that you did everything you could and it didn't work and then you want to voice it, fair enough. But I hope that you did.
Yeah, and he said, like, he did take his ball and go home, and he went elsewhere. And, like, yeah, that's a phrase that's going to have a very negative connotation, and I'm sure it's not meant in a positive way. But at the same time, if I'm John Moxley, then I'm looking at that, and I'd be like, yeah, I took my ball and went to greener pastures, motherfucker. Like, I am doing better right now than I was in WWE. Some people just aren't fits for certain companies. And I think, you know, Seth Rollins, you know, kind of towing the company line and stuff, like I said, makes sense because that's the company that's making him tons of money and he seems happy in his job. There are a lot of people for whom that's not true. And so if you're not happy in that company and you don't fit in there and you can find something else to be more creatively satisfying and make you tons of money, why wouldn't you do that? Right? But it makes sense for Seth to like, be defending WWE because he wants to be top guy in WWE, right? Like if WWE sees these comments and sees how he's talking about the company, like he's sounding like The Miz or John Cena at this point, right? Who are just like complete WWE guys for life, forever. That's the way they are. And if Seth Rollins wants to be that guy, then Seth Rollins wants to be that guy and more power to him. If it like, maybe it's him being like, hey, maybe I should be the guy in WWE. I don't know. Like it's a strategy. And it's not a terrible one if that's what he wants.
Well, also, like, I mean, if wrestlers will say, I mean, like, yeah, you're right. Because one of the things is, like, the WWE have made him a multimillionaire. He's a main eventer. He's a world champion. Like, if he's not going to defend it, who is?
Yeah.
You know, like, so, yeah, I mean, I lap up the drama, but, yeah, I guess we'll see. I hope this is, like, a new thing. I mean, I did like that, you know, Becky Lynch was just, like, feuds on Twitter, who'd imagine, or whatever.
You did know, she? That's yeah. Funny.
And then I think WWE Universe account had posted like, "Can you feel the love tonight?" with a photo of them, and Becky just wrote, "Stop it, lads."
I love her. So I just love her.
Yeah, she's great. So there's that. I did go back and watch the 205 live match from Stomping Grounds, and
what did you think?
I thought it was really good. I liked it. I thought that. Akira Tozawa, I thought Akira was really good. I like Drew Gulak's new kind of attitude that he's got. I still find Tony Nese very boring, but he is a good wrestler. So yeah, I don't really have much to say, but I get why the hype was there. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good. It was one of the better, it was probably my favorite cruiserweight match I've watched since the Tozawa Murphy one a few months ago, which was like, what, Elimination Chamber Fastlane, something like that?
You're asking the wrong person. I remember the match. It was fantastic. But I don't remember when it happened.
Before we talk about 205 Live, I did want to say, just in defense, you know, because Ospreay was saying that I'm alive and all that kind of stuff. And for me, I prefer watching Seth Rollins wrestle to watching Will Ospreay wrestle. Like, I prefer that style. So I think, again, it's going to be really what your style of wrestling is that you like. Some people will argue with you to the death that Will Ospreay is better. And then some people argue that Rollins is better. So it just really... I mean, do you have a preference of the two of them? Do you have a preference of style of wrestling out of those two?
I think for me, it might be Will Ospreay, but when Will Ospreay is also being a little bit more grounded. Like, because Will Ospreay does actually do a lot of like the British like mat style wrestling as well in some of his matches. It just kind of depends who he's facing. So I like when Will Ospreay feels like more of a blend of, you know, flippy stuff and mat wrestling, I guess, when he kind of shows off like his British roots as well. Mm-hmm. But they're both fantastic. I love both of them. I think I've just seen more Will Ospreay matches that I've really gotten super invested in, maybe.
Yeah. I guess it's like saying, do you want a really good steak or a really good burger? Like,
yeah, I mean, like saying that I prefer one over the other, sometimes it just depends on my mood. Like sometimes I might want to watch a Seth Rollins match. I think part of the problem is that Seth Rollins is having matches in WWE, which is a company that I'm not super invested in right now. So a lot of the really great matches that he's having at this point in his career don't connect with me on the same level as when I kind of, you know, dip into New Japan or whatever and watch Ospreay. And I don't have that overwhelming, like, dread of having to watch a show, because well,
it's
sometimes
like like you've had sex with Seth Rollins so many times that you know the moves, whereas mm-hmm. with Will Ospreay, like, oh, I wasn't expecting
it's
that.
Like, oh, that's new and different. That's kind of fun.
That feels interesting. So 205 Live this week for me was a tale of two shows. I thought there was some really good stuff on it. Can we? So Drew Gulak starts the show. And it cuts a good promo. It's funny. So I was like watching it on my Fire Stick, mm-hmm. and I like was fast forwarding the intro package because I just watched the match. So I'm not going to watch the highlights of it. So right. I'm like fast forwarding it, and then I click play, and it was like Gulak, you know, looking at the screen, and I was like, oh, this is great. He's doing like a pretending it's a photo, but really it's video. Just hadn't hit the play button.
I was like, did you just have it paused?
35 seconds.
That's so funny.
But he cut a good promo to start the show. But I'm going to get the negative out of the way first. Why is Tony Nese in it again? Oh!
Probably because the story is more between Tony Nese and Drew Gulak. It makes sense to me because Tony Nese is the guy that didn't get pinned for the championship, so he has a claim to it, right? Like, he didn't get pinned for his own championship, and he's upset about that. And I think his promo later on in the show was quite good explaining that. I know that you find him to be the most boring human alive except for Cedric Alexander and Kalisto, but I think the story of Tony Nese, if you've gotten invested in him, is actually pretty good on 205 Live right now. So I'm not mad about it. I wish it were someone else. Like, I want there to be new contenders. I want new people to come in. I'm really hoping that we get Drew Gulak versus Humberto Carrillo again. Like, that would be great.
I feel they just
Drew
had, like,
title.
Because they had Cedric Alexander for so long, who sent you to sleep. And now they've got Tony Nese. And I'm like, are we just trying to find the dullest people? Is that the goal? At least with Kalisto, he's a hot mess sometimes. So that's funny.
That's true. I don't know. Tony Nese, like, him starting off as an arrogant character who counted his abs and now being, like, kind of the underdog who's really had to work from behind to win his title. And, like, he finally conquered Drew Gulak. And, you know, Drew Gulak still has to kind of, like, get back to the point where he can conquer Tony Nese. I like that story. I think that's a good story. I want Drew Gulak to win. I want Drew Gulak to retain his championship. I think they're going to have a fantastic match because they're great at wrestling and they're great at wrestling each other. I really did like Drew Gulak's opening promo to start the show. I wish we could have seen a little bit more of him on the show, but I kind of understand, like, 205 Live's an hour show, and a lot of times you don't get as much of everyone, which is probably why it's a lot more digestible than the main roster. But I like what he said. You know, he gave up on a dream of, you know, a better 205 Live because he was making a better Drew Gulak, and now it worked, right? And I love that. I love that the payoff to that story was that it actually worked and he is the champion now. And I still get goosebumps over it. It makes me so happy that he finally got there because I was starting to lose hope that he ever would. And so, you know, him saying, like, I am not caring. I am not being generous anymore. I'm all about me. But because I'm the champion and because I'm the leader here, we are going to have a better 205 Live because I'm on top. And I love that. I love that attitude. And I think it's fantastic. So I welcome our overlord of submission holds. And I'm still really happy about it. And I'm looking forward to Drew Gulak versus Tony Nese. I really did want it to be Akira Tozawa, though.
Same. I desperately wanted it to be Akira Tozawa, but it was not to be. So, yeah, but I did like the Mike Kanellis thing that was happening where, you know, he lost to Jack Gallagher and now he's kind of quit. That's kind of interesting because he's been having the ongoing thing with Drake Maverick. So I thought that was good, and Humberto Carrillo's win was fine. I mean, I think you're right, he'd be a more interesting candidate to go up against Gulak.
Because, especially with the history between the two.
Well, and also because Drew Gulak is deciding to be a dick and Humberto Carrillo is a really good underdog, so it mm-hmm. kind of fits. And plus, Humberto Carrillo just comes across as more interesting.
He's great. Like, he's one of those guys that he doesn't cut tons of promos or anything, but he just has charisma for days, and the most adorable smile. So I love him. And he's so good in the ring, like so good. The Mike Kanellis thing is interesting because he's been on kind of a losing streak in 205 Live lately. And so Drake Maverick has been like, you don't really deserve to get more opportunities. Like, you don't deserve title opportunities. You don't deserve to, you know, fight high caliber opponents because you keep losing. So he's been on a quest to try and win and try and win and try and win. And it just hasn't really been working. And so Maria's been still by his side, like supporting him and stuff like that. But for this to be kind of the last straw for him to be like, all right, now I'm done, I quit. I'm curious where that goes. Like, I'm very curious. I think that's an interesting story that he's so despondent and just like done with life, kind of like Drake Maverick being done with life after losing the 24/7 championship, right? Like, I don't know. That's interesting character drama. That's reacting to loss. And I am curious to see where it goes.
But yeah, overall, it was pretty interesting. As a show. I mean, like I say, Tony Nese, who could possibly care outside of Sandra? But, you know,
there are other people who care.
I've not seen one person in most of the history of me being online that's been like, people should watch 205 Live for Tony Nese.
Well, no, I don't know that many people are saying that. But, I mean, people who watch 205 Live are like, no, Tony Nese is more interesting than you give him credit for.
Well, look, I think that Drew Gulak is someone who could pull in new people to watch. I think Carrillo's got a chance. I just think with Tony Nese, you're just knocking your head against the wall.
Which is why Drew Gulak should retain his championship on whatever date Extreme Rules happens.
Yeah. I mean, I think, Hopefully that's the pre-show, but we'll see, I guess. What else have we got to talk about this week? Before we talk about...
I was disappointed at the lack of Drake Maverick on 205 Live. Can I just say that? Because I was really looking forward to him having to try to generally manage in his distraught state. And we didn't get that. We just had, you know, people saying, oh, I've spoken to Drake Maverick and I'm going to get a match. And I really, really wanted to see Drake Maverick. Like, I wanted to see him having to make decisions.
Well, maybe that'll play in the fact that he's, like, drunk and on a bender and just didn't come to work. Maybe that'll play into...
Because was it Lucha House Party had the promo that they were like, we've spoken to Drake Maverick and we're going to face the Singh Brothers in a tornado tag team match next week that no one really needs to see. They didn't say that last part, obviously, but that's how I feel. But yeah, like he's been kind of more of an off-screen general manager lately. And it's so weird that I'm like, no, I would like to see the authority figure slightly more, in very small doses in backstage segments where they're not getting involved in every single match. But I don't know. I think his story is very interesting.
This is not a couple of not uplifting stories, but, I did just want to say that, the former Big Cass, Kaz XL, is he's now known. He did a video on the DDP Yoga YouTube page. I think it's actually pretty worth checking out because he talks about struggling with depression and addiction and how that's kind of been something that's been going on with him and, you know, how nervous he would get when he was wrestling on weekly TV. There was one night where he couldn't sleep, so he drank at the hotel bar all night, and the next day, like, he was, like, wishing he was dead. Talked about getting released, saying that, like, they 100% should have released him, it was the right move. Talked about the seizure that he had at House of Hardcore. And talks about how he's trying to stay clean and get himself back on track. And I don't know, I think it's a really good video. And I know that a lot of people, I mean, look, we were pretty harsh on him as a wrestler when he was there. But I think that he came across very well in the video. So if anybody gets a chance to check it out, I would encourage that.
And that might explain some of his asshole behavior too, if he was struggling with addiction and depression and that kind of stuff. Not that it's excusable, because it's not, but... I mean, it sucks for the guy, and I hope that he is getting clean and doing well. I haven't seen the video yet, but I will check it out.
And then Tommy Dreamer, I mean, Tommy Dreamer has said that I'm trying to find the exact, see, I read this earlier today, and I'm like, have I dreamt it now? Because I can't find it. Like, I read a story today about how Tommy Dreamer said that he wanted to kill Paul Heyman at WrestleMania 17.
What?
I'm sure I read this. Am I going mad?
I don't know. I can't say whether you read it or not. I just... Because I haven't read it, but that's not shocking because I haven't read a lot of things.
Okay. Maybe I have lost my mind. I'm going to keep looking for this while we talk, and I'm going to try and find it so that by the end of this podcast, I don't seem like someone's gone insane. In the meantime, though, talk to me about... Vince McMahon's new rule that there needs to be no wrestling during commercial breaks, which means that there's going to be like 2 or 3 falls matches and random 8-man tags that are then restarted into regular tags when teams have been eliminated. And
I hate this so much. Like, instead of, I don't know, if you don't want wrestling during commercial breaks, right? Schedule the matches around commercial breaks or schedule the commercial breaks around matches. Don't have the dumbest stipulations in the entire world. There were two out of three falls matches on SmackDown for no reason. No reason whatsoever. Two out of three falls is one of my favorite stipulations, and I hate seeing it be bastardized by this because, like, two out of three falls should be like a feud ender, like a culmination of something. If they seem so evenly matched, you have to go two out of three falls to see who can come out on top. Not, I'm Dolph Ziggler and I want to fight Kofi Kingston again because I want to make Sandra like throw herself out the window or something. Like, I hate this so much. It's so stupid. And then like restarting matches as tag matches and having interference and stuff. It makes everything feel flatter and more dull, which WWE does not need to be doing right now. And it cheapens all of the stipulations that can add drama to matches when you use them correctly. So it's real stupid. I don't understand it. If you don't want wrestling during commercials, then don't schedule wrestling during commercials. You don't have to have this like, I don't know, Machiavellian plan to try and evade the commercial time. It's not going to work, and it must kill the live crowds because they just have to sit there for 5 minutes.
It's really weird. I mean, the thing that's funny to me is, like, so apparently the reason is that he doesn't want people to... He wants it to be a more sports-like presentation. Firefly Funhouse. like, you... You've spent the last fucking 30 years saying that you're not sports and that you're entertainment. Although they argue they're sports because the money for sports is much better than entertainment. So really,
but thing is though, like in sports, it's not like they pause play for a commercial break, right? Like they put the commercials around play. Like if in football or whatever, in American football, when, you know, all of the million times that the game has to stop because American football is ridiculous and they're like never playing, then yeah, there's plenty of time for ad breaks when nothing's happening because there are a lot of built-in breaks into the game. But that's not the way they're doing it. They're trying to schedule the game around commercials rather than vice versa.
I mean, yeah, it's just crazy. And it's like... Because earlier today I watched the Alexa Bliss 365 special, and it's brilliant, by the way, if people haven't watched it yet. But there's a couple of periods in there where she talks about Vince, and it's, like, good stuff, as opposed to... Because I think he does care about the talent, and, like, in terms of them being well and stuff, and wanting them to succeed. And, you know, he doesn't want people to die or to get really badly injured. He wants to... You know, like, he told her to go and take time off, and... You know, with Roman, he was great about everything that happened. Like, so I think there are good elements to him. But then there's sometimes you just hear this kind of stuff about the no wrestling during commercial breaks, and you just kind of go, have you lost your mind, though? Because, I mean, how often is it... I know you live in America, so I guess maybe you would know more than me. How often is a commercial break on a US TV? Like, is it every 15 minutes, every 10?
I don't watch regular TV, so I don't really know. I want to say about every, like, 10, 15, something like that.
In the UK, it's every 15. I feel like it's more in the States.
It might be. Maybe it's, like, more often, but fewer commercials.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
I don't actually know, though, because, like, I don't have cable or anything, so I don't often watch, like, live programming. I usually just watch things on demand later.
I mean, I guess we can only hope this is going to be like a very short-term thing that he changes his mind back again.
I hope so. Like, I'm hoping it's one of those decisions that, like, they threw out there. It was an edict. They realized this isn't working and kind of go back to normal proceedings soon. Because it's, like, there were some of the matches that were happening that just made no sense. And because I kind of fast-forwarded through Raw and SmackDown last night and just... You can. It's almost like they're trying to, you know, in movies when there are those like laser light beams and you have to try to evade them to try and rob a bank or something. It seems like they're making things way more difficult for themselves and having to like evade all of these laser beams when they could just like flip the off switch and walk through, you know?
It's very strange. Now, thank God I've found this Tommy Dreamer thing. I was really worried that I was smelling burnt toast. Do you know what I mean? Like a stroke was coming. So this was shared. Now it was shared on bodyslam.net about the newest episode of Tommy Dreamer's House of Hardcore podcast. So I imagine they wouldn't have written this whole transcript if it wasn't true. But it's so crazy that you would imagine it's not true. So apparently Tommy Dreamer was talking about depression. And he talked about how when ECW went out of business when he was 29, Heyman, you know, screwed him big time, and, you know, he did an offer from WCW for $750,000. I mean, well, we can unpack that in a minute. But anyway, he said that, you know, Heyman was in WWE all along, and he was getting a paycheck there, and he was depressed. And can I read you this? Because it's so bonkers that I feel like I want to read you the whole thing. Keep your thoughts, and then just respond. Okay, this is a
long muting one. My microphone just in case I'm going to, like, exclaim or something.
Yes, so just, I'll give you the whole thing, and then you respond. Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Sit back, relax. I've got an innocent gun here, in joke, to read it out. So here we go, quick swig. Here it goes. This is crazy for me to admit, but I'm doing it for a reason. Just like I admitted to other things previously. WrestleMania in Houston, 17. Paul Heyman told me I was going to debut. All this stuff when they had TLC and Spike Dudley come in and Rhino come in and Lita come in, that was supposed to be my spot. And then it got X-nayed. There was going to be a hardcore 24/7 thing that was going to be all about you. That was when I was supposed to debut. I remember I did a show there and I saw a sign that said Guns Welcome and I was in Houston. I did an indie show and I said, what is this? I'm from New York. What do you mean Guns Welcome? And they said, oh, you're allowed to bring a firearm into the venue. I was across the street from the Astrodome. When I tell you it resonated in my head so much that I'll tell you what I wanted to do. It's sick that I think this. At WrestleMania, I was going to hop the rail and I was going to whack Paulie in the back of the head right at the announce table. Then I was going to whack myself. The ultimate martyr. I was going to hit my pose crack, boom, pull the trigger, because I was that insane. Don't know if I would have went through with it, but that's what I was thinking about every day. I was like, I will go down in history. Pop, boom, first they think it's an angle until I shot him. I was so severely depressed and so mental with rage, I needed help. That help came from a phone call from Jim Ross. Randomly I got a phone call from a number I didn't know, I didn't pick up, and I remember having these thoughts, and it was bad. I had a gun, I was like, could you think about the horribleness that I would have done for my legacy? I would have ruined WrestleMania, which I love WrestleMania. For everybody, these thoughts were so crazed in my head. How dare that person? He screwed my parents over. And I come from a mobster mentality. In my head, I was like, I would become infamous, which is famous for the wrong reason. I'm glad I didn't do it. But when that phone call came from Jim Ross, again, just said, leave a message. It said, hey, Tommy, it's Jim Ross. Just wanted to let you know we're still thinking about you. We're going to get it done. Just got to hang tight. Thank you. Think of how stupid I would have been, how dumb and how messed up my thoughts would have been if they had come to fruition. I'm so happy I didn't do it. I'm so happy that I did get that phone call from someone who's a stranger. I barely knew the guy. There was another day. There's been a lot of other days.
What the fuck? That's crazy. Like, that's really crazy. And, I mean, at least he's not saying this in, like, a, like, oh, ha, 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 this thing I wanted to do. Like, it sounds like he knows how incredibly insane that would have been and how messed up that would have been. Can you imagine?
Best WrestleMania of all time ruined by that?
Yeah, well, I mean, not just the wrestling show, but, like, men would be dead. That's a pretty big deal. Like, I don't even know how to respond to that. He's like, you know, I would have ruined WrestleMania, and I like WrestleMania. It's like, I think WrestleMania is the least of our concerns here.
Yeah, it's...
He wanted to murder a human being.
Now, also, I don't know, if I'm Paul Heyman, I mean, Paul Heyman is very unique, but, like, what do you do if you're Heyman and you read this today?
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, that's something. Like, I mean, it's Heyman, I'm sure he could spin it, but, like...
I'm trying to think, I don't think I've ever... Like, I've thought about, like, you know, like, you see people in the media who are, like, you'll see, like, a rapist on TV, or you'll see, like, somebody who's been arrested for murder and stuff, and you go, God, you know, they should get what they deserve. But I've never actually had a thought, I've never had a thought in my mind about finishing somebody off that way. Well, I've had thoughts about finishing somebody off, but that's a different thing. It's not death, it's... Anyway.
Something else.
Something else. But, yeah, mad, right?
That is crazy. That's really crazy. I mean, good thing he didn't do it. So they allowed guns into this arena?
You live in this country, not me.
I'm not saying I agree with it. I mean, I've been plenty of places, though, where I've seen signs like that. Like, because I remember when we were in, I think we were in Missouri. I think it was, yeah, when we were in Branson, Missouri a few years ago, we went to see a show. And there was, like, a big old, like, guns welcome, stand your ground, like, sign above this venue that we were at. And I was just like, holy shit. Like, I don't feel safe with that sign on the wall. Like, I don't really like it. Cause that's me. But yeah, that's just, I don't even know how to respond to it, I guess. That's just crazy. And like, it shows how dark of a place he was in. And I guess I understand like why he wants to share the story, just to say like mental illness can really fuck you up and it can make you want to do really crazy things. And I mean, he could have been like Chris Benoit before Chris Benoit.
Yep. It's crazy. So can I just not vent, but can I just like talk about a concern that I've got / an annoyance? Sure. Okay, so watching current roster stuff and watching Retro Raw is like a blessing and a curse at the same time in some ways. And I was watching Raw live, and I am sitting watching it, and I'm watching Shane and Drew beat up Roman, and I'm watching it all take place, and I'm kind of, and then the gong hits, right? And I lose my mind. I'm an Undertaker fan again, right? I lose it, and I go, oh my God. And then he's there, and it's like, and he's standing there, and he saves Roman. I thought, this is fucking great, right? This is a really great moment, and blah, blah, blah. And they show the replay of it, and then about 10 minutes later, you know, like, you know when you see something that you're really excited about, you cannot, yet you have the slight calm down from what you've seen. And
right.
I'm getting my calm down, and then I started to get really worried. And here's the issue. Because later on in the show, they announce tag match, Extreme Rules, Undertaker and Roman Reigns against Shane and Drew, right? That's what the match is going to be. And it struck me that when we watch Retro Raw, you know, again, I always say, I understand some of the criticisms of it, but you would never have someone turn up to have a moment, and that's just the match. And that's it. That's the story, right? 20 years ago, you had to come out and explain why things were happening, especially in a main event scene, right? You wouldn't see... But now what tends to happen, especially with people like The Undertaker, is that they'll come out and they'll do this one moment, which can be really exciting for the people who like it, and then they don't do anything with it. So for me, like, I would love if next week The Undertaker came out and said, I came out last week because Roman Reigns was one of only two men that was able to beat me at WrestleMania. And I couldn't stand by and watch what they were doing to him. And I lived through years of the McMahons torturing everybody, and I couldn't stand by and watch it again, right? Something like that.
It's an easy ready-made story, actually, for everyone saying that this makes no sense. And, I mean, far be it for me to defend an Undertaker appearance, but I'm going to. It's an easy ready-made story based on the respect that the Undertaker gained for Roman Reigns at that WrestleMania, right? Like, they could tell that story. I don't trust that they're going to.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm looking at it, I'm going, that would be great, and I would be really into seeing that story take place. But then your mind kind of goes into fantasy land, and I was thinking... I mean, it'd be great if this led to, like, Undertaker and Drew at SummerSlam or something. But the problem is, like, they didn't feel comfortable giving Drew a win over Roman Reigns. So they're probably not going to anyway push for him to beat The Undertaker. You know? And so then you kind of have this thing where you've got this legend that you bring back. And you bring him back and he works with people, but you're not helping the other people. You know? And it's like... When Undertaker debuted in 1990, the first match he had, he was made to look very strong over Dusty Rhodes. He immediately disposed of Coco Beware and very in it with ease. He beat Jimmy Snuka in his first WrestleMania. He was one of like, I don't know how many guys had pinned Hogan on TV from 85 onwards. I was only two. I think it was Andre and Warrior. So maybe one of only three guys to ever pin Hogan, even if it wasn't clean. That's why The Undertaker became The Undertaker, because he was positioned as becoming, he was the guy. He would tombstone Jake the Snake Roberts and beat him. He got to be elevated through people. And it's like, I just, in my brain, I'm going, and this is not a thing at The Undertaker. This is more at WWE, but it's like, when you've got guys, I just don't think that if you said to The Undertaker, hey, we want to make Drew, can you come back and do this 2-month program? And Drew wins in the end. I don't think he'd be against it. Or maybe either to talk him into it. But I just don't get the vibe from the time I spent with him a couple of months ago. Stuff I've heard about him. Like, I just don't think he would be the sort of person to be like, no, that doesn't make any sense. But it doesn't seem like they push for any of that. And they don't ask for it. So even if they do that and Undertaker does have a match with Drew at SummerSlam, which to me would be a pretty big match. But they're not going to do it because they don't... To them, being in the ring with someone... is elevation enough, and you know that it baffles me. So I'm worried, and I'm kind of like, it's just another example where I'm like, I can see things that they could do that could be really good, and I'm just afraid they're going to do what they usually do and just don't make any effort with it.
I mean, I'm the worst one to ask about, like, do I trust that an Undertaker story is going to have a happy ending for anyone, right? Like, I just, it was a really cool moment on Raw. It was a really cool moment on Raw. But do I want to see Undertaker versus Drew at SummerSlam? No, I don't, because I'm pretty sure the Undertaker would win, and he really shouldn't win at this point. And that's, I mean, everything you're saying is why there will never be another Undertaker, right? Like, there won't be. Because they're not going to build someone the way they built him for 20 years. And that sucks. And it's sad. And it's one of those things that, as a newer wrestling fan, it's like, never in my wrestling fandom do I have someone to really like cling to the way people have, like, your Hogan or your Undertaker or your Rock or your Austin, or I guess even for some people, John Cena, maybe. But like, even John Cena was kind of a different situation. I don't know. Like, it's a bummer because I don't trust it to really go anywhere. And I don't even trust them to tell the story of the tag match. Like, I want them to tell the story of the tag match with The Undertaker stepping in because he has been the WWE guy for so long and he's had so many like entanglements with the McMahons. And I want them to bring up the fucking like lockbox again from that horrible, horrible Shane McMahon versus Undertaker feud from WrestleMania. Like, Undertaker has a reason to be upset with Shane McMahon, and Undertaker has a reason to want to defend Roman Reigns from Shane McMahon's dastardly behavior. And if they can tell a good story with that going into Extreme Rules, fine, fair enough. But I kind of hope it's a one and done, because I feel like going any further than that is just going to lead to disappointment for me. And I'm sorry to sound so like negative and stick in the mud about it, but it's just.
You're just using history as a, you know, they say that you learn from history. Well, that's what you
Exactly.
learn. And it's like, the thing is, it's like I think they have this thing where they think with that less is more, and I'm like, no, this time more would be more. Like, this time would be when you want more.
Because I
So
mean, The Undertaker is the one who didn't show up to build his feud with John Cena. He's the one who didn't show up to build his feud with Bray Wyatt. So the fact that he's showing up seems like a big deal, but it is weird that it's just, you know, leading to a random match at Extreme Rules in a couple weeks. And it was, you know, for Undertaker fans, I'm sure it was a really cool moment. For me, it looked like it would have been a really cool moment for other people. It's fine. It's fine.
And it's the thing is, I mean, it's there, you know, when they say to him, "Oh, we want you to come and do this WrestleMania or do that," fair enough. But the onus is on the company to build around that if that's what you're doing, and it doesn't feel like they do that a lot. So, yeah, it's not very exciting. I thought overall though that they did a better job on Raw this week overall than they've done in the last kind of month or so. It wasn't like the best show ever, but I think there's some interesting stuff on it. What did you make of the stuff that you got a chance to see?
I'm trying to remember what else I got a chance to see. I loved the 24/7 stuff. I still love, although the scramble at the end felt a little like paint by numbers, I would say. Like when Cedric Alexander won it, and I think who else won it? EC3 and Heath Slater, and I can't remember. Like that was almost starting to feel a little too like, okay, like we all pin each other, and then R-Truth just kind of gets it in the end again. I like R-Truth as champion. I like Drake Maverick's quest for it. On SmackDown, you know, Drake obviously went up to R-Truth and was like, I'm just losing my whole life and all this stuff. I don't have a referee. And, you know, watching his descent into madness has been lovely. I think Drake Maverick is almost carrying this feud a little bit more than R-Truth at this point. But other than that, I'm trying to remember what else even happened.
I think the thing with AJ Styles seeming to have more of a story with the club is pretty interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing where that goes.
It's interesting, but at the same time, the club were like, we're serious. We're going to prove that we're serious. And then they fight the Viking Raiders, who haven't been on TV in forever. So, I mean, like, if you beat the Viking Raiders at this point, who cares? But it's like, you know, they show up and I like them showing up in the conga line and AJ being like, you have to get serious. We talked about this. And I think it was Carl Anderson that was like, no, we didn't talk about this. You talked about this, right? And so there is a little bit of dissension there. That's an interesting story. But the problem is the club just went out, fought the Viking Raiders, and lost. So AJ was right. So I don't really know what the club has to say now. Like they said that they got serious in the ring and it worked. And, you know, whereas Heavy Machinery on SmackDown, I think, is actually proving that they've gotten to be serious and they've, you know, gotten to be elevated a little bit more, because they're very parallel stories, right? Like the AJ Styles and Club, and then Daniel Bryan like calling out Heavy Machinery and all the other tag team divisions. They're kind of the same story, right?
Yeah, you know, that's true. I mean, I think that the stories lasted more than like one show, which is what usually happens with the club. So maybe it is going to go somewhere. I'll give a compliment. I actually thought the Kofi Kingston stuff with Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, while continuous punch bag for Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, I thought it was good for Kofi to have a win over a couple of guys who matter.
Yeah, I think like I have to try and accept the fact that Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are not there to be big stars themselves right now in WWE. And that's a hard pill to swallow because Sami Zayn's one of my very, very favorites. But in terms of Kofi Kingston and his championship, they're doing that right. Like he should be winning. He should be winning these matches. He should not be getting pinned.
Yeah, and I also, I mean, so I'm in two minds about the, I like the Ricochet AJ Styles match, and I like the idea of, I like the idea of Samoa Joe being Kofi Kingston's new challenger, but at the same
time. Except that
time,
he's a Raw guy.
Well, that's not even my biggest problem. My biggest problem is he just lost the mid-card title the night before.
Mm-hmm.
And what they tend to do with Samoa Joe is this kind of paint my numbers thing of like, they have him lose a big match, and then he comes out and does a beatdown. And he's great at doing the beatdowns, but it just kind of, I mean, look, I'll give it this. I think Kingston against Samoa Joe feels like a far bigger match than Kingston against Dolph.
Yes. 100% yes.
I mean, Dolph Ziggler on SmackDown, I'm going to use a disturbing analogy here. The idea of them saying if Dolph Ziggler wins, he's added to the match is like saying, if he wins, you need to fuck a family member.
Ugh.
That's the level of like disgust that I have of him being involved in that match. So thankfully, that didn't have to happen. I'm trying to give some Kofi love here. I thought that this week did a little bit of rehab for him that was needed badly. So fair play, they did. And I despise the fact that AJ Styles beat Ricochet in a non-title match because non-title matches with champions losing is just such a trope. But
it's such a trope, and it's also like it sucks for Ricochet, right? Because he finally had his big moment, and he's the champion now. And so you'd think, like, with all of the 50-50 weird him losing all the time stuff going into his championship, you'd think you'd want to build him a little bit before you have him fight AJ Styles. Like, it seems like it's way too soon for AJ Styles to be fighting Ricochet anyway. Like, that's a match that should really be a bigger deal than it was. It shouldn't just be like, we'll see you tomorrow in a non-title match. Because when AJ said, see you tomorrow at the pay-per-view, I thought it was going to be for the title. But no, it's just not for the title. It's just because AJ Styles wants to fight Ricochet, apparently. Okay, fine, whatever. So the whole thing just, that's my problem with WWE right now. Like nothing really seems to matter that much or make any sense. And then you just get AJ Styles beating Ricochet. And yeah, like AJ Styles, former world champion, one of their top guys. So it's not like losing to AJ Styles is a big deal, but getting pinned in your first match after winning the US championship doesn't make the belt look good and doesn't really make you look like a star. So that's kind of frustrating. Like do another match, have him fight someone else, have AJ do something else, right? Like he doesn't have to wrestle on every show. It frustrates me that that happened. And yeah,
it's it's like the Bailey thing, right? It's like they give you something to take it away. So like they give you further in the story of Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss, which is good, by Nikki Cross being like, I'm gonna fix this for you. Like I'm gonna fix what I fucked up. But then you also have Bailey losing a non-title match in very short order. So while you advance the story with Cross and Bliss, you are then cheapening Bailey at the same time, which I just don't.
You're
think
cheapening
you
Bailey as a character, which is frustrating, but also she's your champion. Right. And I mean, it did feel like a fluke pin. So like Nikki Cross pinning Bayley, I guess, didn't bother me as much as the AJ Styles Ricochet thing, because like they did the whole like hug of respect thing. So, I mean, I assume that AJ Styles is going to get a U.S. championship shot now. Right. Because if you pin the challenger in a non-title match, then you get a title match. Right. And is AJ Styles just going to win it? Like, is he just going to be U.S. champion again and Ricochet just goes back to obscurity? I don't know. Like that kind of bums me out. Like the Nikki Cross thing at least was to further a story, and it made Nikki feel like a bigger deal, which I think needs to happen because she's been such a sidekick and such a lackey, and she's so good. Like, you know that I want Nikki Cross to have the world. So it's nice to see her looking like a player. And I think one of the compliments I'll give this week's shows is that I think Alexa Bliss did start to feel like a little bit more of a bitch this week, like even around Nikki, which I think is needed, because that was my big complaint, was like, if Alexa's saying that she was made to feel like she doesn't belong and made to feel like she, you know, it felt like an outcast in NXT and saying that Bayley's, you know, mean and horrible and Bayley's just brushing it off, then that just made it seem like Alexa Bliss was right and Bayley was kind of jerk. And then like Natalia and Naomi coming up to Nikki and being like, Alexa isn't who she says she is. Nikki's like, I know her reputation, but she's been nothing but great to me. Like, you need to see those cracks in Alexa Bliss on screen to make that story work, because otherwise it just seems like everyone's being a dick to Alexa.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think they did a better job this week. I mean, also, I forgot to say this when we were talking about the Undertaker thing. I mean, Shane McMahon did address Taker's return on SmackDown and did kind of say that he'd survived it before. So maybe the fact they're working with Shane means they're actually going to put in a little bit of effort to this one.
I hope so.
Maybe.
I mean, remember last time Undertaker and Shane McMahon fought and all the story happened in the first week and then it was terrible?
What was in the lockbox, Sandra?
I don't know what was in the lockbox. I'm still wondering to this day.
I'm still waiting for who the next recipient is, the Vince McMahon Legacy Award.
Legacy, so many mysteries.
Anyway, also, I did really like the kind of Easter eggs of the Firefly Funhouse characters popping up in random scenarios.
That was cool. I didn't notice them as I was fast-forwarding through the show, just because I had to watch both Raw and SmackDown in a period of about like an hour and a half. But I saw screen caps of some of them, and that made me pretty happy. I like the fact that they're showing up. Because who did they pop out behind? Like, there was one behind Kofi, I think.
One
was
Mercy
the Buzzard. Yeah, I think Abby the Witch popped out behind The Miz. Did they do it on SmackDown as well? Because I saw some screen caps from Raw. Okay.
They did, yeah.
Very cool.
Okay, so to finish off the show, I did get some listener questions, Sandra.
All right, so let's take them.
Let's take them. Cammy Hutton says, is Pod of Thunder the best show in the Inside the Ropes network?
No.
Is that a firm no, or is that a, you know, is it like a Raw Nitro situation where it's like week to week?
Sure.
Peter Jenkins, do you see the WWE officially ending?
I love Ali and Asad. I do. I love them dearly.
They put questions out for last week's show, and somebody had like asked a question. I'm not going to say who it was, and Ollie's response was, "This is why we're behind a paywall."
Of course, isn't that every week that someone puts out questions like that?
Pretty much. I mean, but you know, it's anyway. Peter Jenkins says, "Do you see WWE officially ending the brand split by the time Fox takes over SmackDown Live?" Peter, I think the brand split's over already. I mean, how many people were on Raw this week from SmackDown? Like 12? 13? Now there's like Raw guys going for SmackDown titles. There's like...
Yeah, because Daniel Bryan and Eric Rowan were on Raw for whatever reason. And then Kofi Kingston and Samoa Joe, all of that dissension was happening on Raw. To the point where I was watching it last night and Mr. Saunders came into the room because I think I was speaking to the computer and I was just like, why is this happening on Raw? And he looked at the computer fully like red ropes and everything. He goes, this is SmackDown, isn't it? And I was like, oh, no, no. You would think this is SmackDown. This is not SmackDown. This is Raw for some reason, and I don't understand what's happening, and it frustrates me. So the brand split seems pretty dead. I mean, Samoa Joe going for Kofi Kingston's championship. Like, Samoa Joe's on Raw. Kofi Kingston's on SmackDown. Like, Alexa Bliss getting a rematch with Bayley for the SmackDown Women's Championship. Alexa Bliss is supposed to be on Raw. Bayley's on SmackDown. Like, none of that makes any sense. The issue is, though, they haven't officially, quote-unquote, ended the brand split because they still have two titles for everything. So do you think they're going to try and unify everything?
Because remember, was it 2011 when they started the Raw Super Show and then it slowly just morphed into it was the same thing?
Yeah.
I think that's what they'll do. So, I think you eventually make unification matches. A lot of people are in trouble if they do it, though, because, you know, they've got a lot of people on TV and there's not that much time. So,
yeah, but I feel like they're already in trouble. They're already not on TV.
Yeah, so I think it might just get worse. What else we got? Anthony Fitzpatrick, I'm extremely hungover. What's your best hangover cure? My best hangover cure is to stay laid down for most of the day and take short spurts like around. Don't overexert yourself. And then have a roll and sausage and some iron brew from a glass bottle that is cold.
I was going to say iron brew for sure, like 100% iron brew, and also drinking lots of water. Like, it sounds cliche, but if you drink tons of water, it does help.
Also, see, like, mid-afternoon, have a cocktail.
Yeah.
You know, just like wet the dog or whatever they call mm-hmm. it.
I don't know if I've ever called it wet the dog, but sure.
Hair of the dog. It's hair of the dog, right?
That's what it is.
Hair of the dog. Sean Aldred, do you see the 24/7 title last until WrestleMania? Well, I mean, if this keeps going the way it's going with the non-brand split, you're probably gonna have about five times the amount of people running after it, so why not?
I love it. I think it's great. I want to see new stories start to develop. Like, I mean, I kind of want either Drake Maverick to win it back or something else. Like, I would like to see someone else as champion. Like,
I was really hoping that this week on Raw that The Miz was luring R-Truth in. Like, you know,
to pin him. Yeah. Like, I wondered why he didn't.
I thought he was going, oh, yeah, nobody's going to interfere, and then just did it.
Yep.
But he didn't do it. This is a good question. Matthew, I say it like I'm surprised. Matthew says, why do you think wrestling is held to different standards of taste than other fictional TV shows? It wouldn't be uncommon for a terrorist, racist, murderer, etc. character on other TV shows, so why can't the talent be characters? Is it because the guys are presented as themselves, roughly? Like, why do you think wrestling is different in how people accept it and consume it?
I think that's because wrestling is this weird blend of reality and fiction, right? Like, the only thing close to it is maybe reality television. Because the characters are presented as human beings, like as themselves, and because they go out into the world as themselves and as those characters, then it just seems like if you do certain characters in wrestling, it does seem to step over a line, at least a line that I don't like. There are certain things I just don't want to see in wrestling, right? And I know some people disagree on that, and that's fine. But I think because it is such a weird blend of reality and fiction, and you don't know where the line stops and where the line starts, and you know, if you have such a cartoonish character like a terrorist or something like that, you get into kind of like, are you just stereotyping an entire group of people? And also then you have that person, the person behind that going and being like, well, you know, that's the character I play on TV. That's not really me. And you still want to be, I think, enveloped in the world of professional wrestling. Like, you still want to believe to a certain extent that what you're seeing is real. And when some wrestlers use social media to further storylines and stay in character all the time, and then other ones are like, well, this, you know, isn't really who I am, and I'm really this person, and da-da-da-da, it breaks it. Like, it breaks the storytelling in wrestling the way it wouldn't break storytelling if an actor playing someone on a television show said the same thing. It's hard to explain exactly why it works on, like, in pure fiction shows. Maybe it's because wrestling has such a call and response relationship with the audience too. Like, if you're watching Game of Thrones, it's not like you're cheering or booing and they're responding to that, right? There's not an organic give and take, because the audience is part of wrestling. Like, you can't have wrestling without a crowd. So I don't know, like, it's just, it's a different weird art form. But I don't like when they, you know, break character and stuff on the television program, because they do that, right? Like, it bugged me to no end when the opening segment of Raw, right? Seth Rollins is out there talking, and then Becky Lynch comes out, obviously, and interrupts him, which was a cute moment where he's like, you're interrupting me. She's like, am I? But Michael Cole was like, and now Seth Rollins is going to be joined by his real life girlfriend, Becky Lynch. It's like, why can't you just say his girlfriend, Becky Lynch? Why do you have to say his real life girlfriend, Becky Lynch, to be like, no, this isn't a script, this isn't a storyline? Like, that stuff takes me out of it. So, I don't know. That's a long-winded way of saying I can't really put my finger on it, but wrestling's weird. What do you think?
Yeah, there's so many weird facets to it. So, I'm about to do exactly what you did, which is just, like, spurt five or six different things, and they're not really coherent. So, for example, people want to rag on wrestling for not being real, but then they don't accept that the people are playing a role. So, like, when Triple H did the thing in 2003 where, you know, he was facing Booker T, and it was like, well, people like you don't win. Well, Paul Levesque surely is not held to task on that, because that is Triple H potentially showing racist tendencies as a character or whatever, but that is held to Paul Levesque. A lot of people see that as him. So it's like wrestling, for whatever reason, just doesn't seem to be able to do those types of stories. Where, I mean, also, if Booker T had won, that would have helped, because then he would have overcame it. But even then, it's like, it's almost like if a bad, you know, sometimes you watch a movie and somebody dies, right? And that's it, and that character's gone, and they don't get a comeback. But in wrestling, we're taught that there should be a comeback and there should be whatever. So that part of it doesn't work. You know, then there's, like, I've said before, intergender wrestling is not really for me. And I think part of the reason that it's not for me, I kind of am with Cornette in the sense of, like, I don't want to see Brock Lesnar having to sell for Carmella ever in my life. But I think part of the problem of why intergender wrestling maybe doesn't work for me, on top of what that part of it, I think if all the women that they had in the roster were strong, believable fighters, then I would buy it more. But because, like, if you have somebody like Asuka, who you would buy in a fight with a guy quite easily, but then she's got to go and, like, pretend that Lana can give her some sort of, like, physicality, which wouldn't be believable within the tale of what you just told. So that's a tough spot. And unless the Nia Jax, like, the Royal Rumble worked so well because it was believable that Nia Jax would have a shot in that scenario. She's a fighter, you know, and so is Ronda Rousey, and so is Asuka. There are believable people in that spot, but because there's a lot of the women who aren't believable in that role, I think that hurts where it is. But again, if it's all fiction, then you can do what you want, but you can't really, because in the mainstream, that's not really accepted. So there's all these rules in wrestling that don't really make sense, and they're just kind of there. And the, you know, Max Landis' wrestling isn't wrestling is a great thing to watch.
Like, he's a cretin, but it was
he
well
is
done.
A cretin. But you know, I mean, oh yeah, that's another thing though. It's like, now you can't recommend some form of media if the person's a bad person. You know, that's like something that's like, and that's another facet to stuff of, like, in wrestling, for example, as well. Like, if you were to say, so I think it's, who's like a really, like Hogan, right? Like, if I say I'm a Hogan fan, does that mean I'm a racist? Because I like a character? You know, it's like, I'm not out here campaigning that Terry Bollea should be made of Florida. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I like, and it, but it's funny because, like, with Warrior, I totally understand why, and I have no problem with them championing the legend of the Ultimate Warrior character. That doesn't bother me. What bothers me is that that's the fiction world that wrestling should be. But what they've attempted to do is to take the Warrior character out of fiction and to put him into the behind-the-scenes aspect of, like, let's give people a Warrior award that they should strive to, and let's have him be, you know, a statue of community, and let's have him be LGBT, and even though he called people Bill Dykes. Like, so there's all these different fences and things that don't really make a lot of sense. There's a great book to be written by someone who is a lot more coherent than us.
Yeah. Just examining wrestling is fascinating because there's nothing in the world like it. Like, the travel schedule and how you come up in wrestling can maybe be like comparable to music or improv comedy or whatever, but that doesn't have the physical aspect to it. And like, I don't know, like really epic storytelling on television shows can also be comparable to really epic storytelling in wrestling, but that doesn't have, you know, the live aspect to it. It doesn't have all the physicality to it. Wrestling's weird, you guys. Like, it's super weird, but it's the coolest fucking art form in the world. It's my favorite thing.
A couple more questions. Craig Ullock asks a question, which I'm going to tie into something else. Craig says, don't know if it's a question, but can the writing be any lazier lately? There is zero build for anything. Nakamura points at a title he's next in for an IC title shot. Joe attacks Kofi or automatically gets a world title match. Another example being Heavy Machinery reappearing on TV, having back-to-back matches with jobbers on Raw and SmackDown, and then a tag title match by Sunday. And I'm going to tie that in with Connor Hughes, who wrote a thing on Facebook where he said, do you think WWE weekly TV will improve significantly before the beginning of AEW TV? So your answer to Craig and Connor.
I mean, the writing's lazy for sure. I actually like what they're doing with Heavy Machinery, though. That specifically works for me because Daniel Bryan and Eric Rowan called them out to become more serious, right? And while they didn't win against Eric Rowan and Daniel Bryan, they did show that they were capable of hanging with them at the pay-per-view. I really liked that match a lot. So now Heavy Machinery getting wins on... Did they get a win on... I'm trying to remember what happened on Raw. I know they won on SmackDown. I know they pinned someone. So, like, them getting wins and them kind of ascending, I think, is good. I think they got the tag title shot too soon because they hadn't prepared anyone else. But at least they got a couple wins over jobbers before they got the tag title match. I mean, like, how many times on Retro Raw have I said, like, why are the Godwins getting a title match? Or why are the Brood getting a title match? Or why are Public Enemy getting a title match? Like, this makes no fucking sense. So I know you always bring up Retro Raw for, you know, it was so much better, but they had so many random title matches that made no sense on Retro Raw.
Totally, I think the reason that kind of stuff seemed to be okay back then is because they were telling a lot of stories all the time, right? So people would maybe forget about the logic of that kind of stuff. Whereas, like, now,
yeah, because, but I mean, because, like, those particular stories didn't make sense. And it's just like, as a Retro Raw viewer every week, that's the kind of stuff that I'm always questioning, right? And so I think WWE still today has a tendency to lean back on that kind of thing. And at least Heavy Machinery got a couple wins and were on television before they got a tag title shot, was my point. But I mean, yeah, the writing's super lazy, especially now that they have to schedule matches around commercial breaks. It's real stupid. I don't like it. I don't need to see Kofi Kingston and Dolph Ziggler together ever again. I didn't need to see them together again before this little feud started. I don't ever want to see Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre face off again. I said that months ago. They've been doing it for months still. It's real frustrating. It really feels like it's stuck in a rut and something needs to change. Do I think it's going to change before AEW comes? No. Do I think it's going to change when AEW comes? No, not really. I mean, maybe, because they've gone through down periods and then, you know, gone back up and gotten really hot again. It's baffling. When I was thinking last night, actually, I think I was listening to something just about like how dire like ticket sales and ratings and all that kind of stuff is and how it's like a really down period. And I thought back to just a few months ago when we were in New York looking for WrestleMania tickets, and it was legit sold out. Like, we couldn't find anything on StubHub, right? Like, you had to pay an astronomical amount of money to go to WrestleMania. I didn't go to WrestleMania because I wasn't going to pay the astronomical amount of money. So I watched it in a bar because it was that popular and everyone was super into what was going on. And that wasn't that long ago. That was like 3 months ago, not even, which is crazy to me. So, I mean, I think that things could get better if they put in some effort and really like went with a couple people and made coherent storylines and really tried for like a couple months. But I don't think they have the motivation to do it. And I think they're so in panic mode that they're just throwing everything at the wall and it's nothing's really sticking right now.
Yeah, I am. Is it going to get better before AEW? No, but I think there's stuff that's happening that will make change happen. Like, 3,500 people at Raw on Monday is insane. Mm-hmm. That's 1996 numbers. That's like, that's mad.
It's bad.
Seeing the people at the, you know, the half of the Tacoma, or was it Tacoma, whatever it was, in Washington, the thing tarped off for half the building. Like, because that's the
for
whole thing.
For pay-per-view.
Like, yeah, like, you can say that Baron Corbin's a good heel, and or Kofi Kingston's a good champion, or any of that stuff that you want to say, but to me, I think when you have, when that kind of stuff's happening, you have to look at everything and go, what is not clicking? You know, we need to give Kofi new challenges. We need to elevate him. We need to get Corbin the fuck at the main event. Whatever it is that you need to do, you need to look at the metrics. I think that when AEW starts in October, and I think that they will come very close to beating Raw's number. Very close. Right now I'm saying a 1.6. I think AEW got about 1.6. Raw have like a 2.1. I think that'll be like week one. And I think that'll... They do not want AEW to beat them, and if AEW do beat them, like, AEW are doing this whole, like, it's not a war, it's a war. Everything they're
it's
doing
totally
is a
war.
Like, Chris Jericho, I mean, he's great on Twitter right now, like, somebody put things in, tug of war, are you serious? And he like, retweeted it going, best wrestling on the planet.
which, by the way, are Bobby Lashley and Braun Strowman fighting for redemption points? I feel like I'm watching season one NXT or something like that. Like, what is happening right now?
No,
I didn't know
idea.
That they had an arm wrestling contest, and then I was watching this, and I didn't watch a lot of like full segments of Raw, but I watched the full segment of Bobby Lashley versus Braun Strowman, and I was just baffled. I seriously felt like I was watching like game show NXT or something like that, but not in a good way. Like,
well, you know, the thing
what
is,
the fuck?
I still get this thing, and I don't know if a lot of people who... So I'm only talking here to the people who are WWE fans, right? In terms of like, you don't watch a lot of other stuff, because I know a lot of other people who watch other stuff, they get their... Because I don't get my fix anywhere else, right? This is my thing that I watch. And for the most part, like even on Monday, after a pay-per-view, I'll kind of go... I'm clearing my head of the negativity, and I'm getting into this, and I want this to be good. Like, I am not getting into this hoping it's going to be bad. I'm getting into this hoping it's going to be good. And they did give some good stuff, but I feel like there's a lot... You see Braun Strowman come out, and you go, oh, like, he should be so much more popular than he is. I'm not even saying he should be world champion, but he should be more popular.
He should have been world champion at a certain point.
Yeah. But the other thing is, like, I feel
it
like...
It didn't have to be a long reign, but, I mean, like, not giving him that belt and having him fight for it that many times killed him dead.
Well, here's the other thing. When you watch 1999, 1998, like, kind of exciting sometimes that there's a short reign here and there. Like, there's some excitement, and I don't know when it's going to... You know, I don't know when the title's going to change hands. Whereas, like, when somebody wins it and you're like, okay, that's the next 6 months taken care of, like, that's not... One of the things in 1999, to give them their credit, is the whole, like, when Mick Foley won the title on January the 4th through WrestleMania, like, they did a really good job for a long time. Like, you knew what was going to happen, and you were like, oh, I didn't expect this. Like, so you were getting shocked. And
well, yeah, because I didn't know that he was going to win it back in the MT Arena match with The Rock.
Yeah, so, like,
because I knew that his title reign didn't last long, but then, like, The Rock won it and everything, but I didn't know that Mick Foley was going to win it back, and I was just like, oh, that's exciting.
And you look at that now, you look at 20 years later, that run that Mick Foley had in 1999, that was like the biggest part of his career. And it was a short title reign that lasted, you know, the first one lasted 20 days or something like that, and then the other one lasted like a half a month or something. So like, you could give that to somebody who, you know, like, that to me is maybe the sort of reign that Kofi Kingston should have had, which was like, because, you know, Mick Foley, arguably a much bigger star than Kofi, like, he was involved in these kind of... He's got the belt. He's not got the belt. He's trying to get it back. Like, there was a story there. And with Kofi having the belt, there's no story. There's no, like... And then when you put him in there with Ziggler, you're not helping the guy in any way, shape, or form. So there's a lot of stuff they should be doing that would... It's very obvious. I don't know why it's not happening. It's very straightforward. Anyway, two more questions. Danny says, Undertaker was your biggest payoff guy. Yes, he fucking was. Who else do you have in mind that you'd love to have that hasn't been possible? Austin's the number one, but I just don't think it's going to happen because he's never been over here. And yeah, I'd love it to happen, but the truth is, like, we, you know, I don't feel like, as much as we got shit for the Undertaker pricing, like, I've got to pay somebody an amount of money, and I've got them for, like, 2 hours for a meet and greet. Whereas, like, conventions and stuff, they can get somebody for 3 hours and do 700 photos in that time. And I can only do 200. So I can't... The comparable pricing is not really there for me. So it's probably more likely if he's going to do something, he will end up doing a convention. I don't know if he will. But there's other people I've got in mind. I'm not going to say anything, you know. But
Are in the works.
Things are in the works. And, there's some people who've been over before that I want to bring over and do an Inside the Ropes show because, like, I think it'd be good to see them do an Inside the Ropes show. There's people who haven't been before. And... yeah, there's the AEW thing is going to really help in a lot of ways, I think. So that's good. Anthony Kimmett, you can answer this one, Sandra. If you listen to wrestling songs when out and about like me, which one is the hardest not to join in with? For me, it's Real American. It's so damn catchy.
Bailey's theme for me, like, because I always just want to dance to it. I'm trying to think what other ones. Like EC3's theme, I always just want to sing Top 1%. I don't know. There are a bunch of them, though. Like, because Finn Balor's, I always want to do the arms thing.
I've got a really weird one. Undertaker, American Badass by Kid Rock. Don't know why. Like, I really like it. What else? See, I'm weird because I do things where, like, so if we have a show coming up, I don't think I've ever said this. If we have a show coming up, I will basically, when we had Shawn Michaels, I would go out for about a week, and every day I would go out, I would just play Sexy Boy on repeat. For like 2 hours. And in my mind, I'd go, how do I want to do the entrance? What can I get him to do? What would he... Which conversed in me, I actually paid money to have the cowboy hat shipped over.
Yep.
Because...
That was the thing.
Because he wasn't going to... You have to put the cowboy hat in a special case and all that. So he just wasn't... He was like, if you... Like, they were like, if you want to bring it, that's fine. Like, but as long as you pay for it to come over and back. So I did. Which sounds mental, but like when he came out and he had the cowboy hat on, he did the fucking pose, that was cool. So I stand by it. But so I'll do stuff like that. So I'll get a song in my head and for like 2 weeks, it's like, I can't get it. I can't get rid of it. But
I know another one.
Okay.
Stephanie McMahon's theme, Queendom. You know that if that's playing, you and I have to dance to it.
We do. Last thing is more of a statement, but I think it's worth bringing up just for kind of devil's advocate, as John Adams says, more of a discussion point, but how annoying, it's really annoying how WWE in some ways get held to a different standard. Imagine if they had to change a main event match like Double or Nothing did with Pac and Hangman, or couldn't play a headliner's music like New Japan, the internet would have gone mad, not defending WWE, but worth mentioning. And that's a fair point.
That's true.
There are concessions given to other people, that are not given to WWE, but I think that the reason for that is because WWE have so many talented people and they have so much money that, like, they almost should never really have a problem, you know? Like, at this point, you should be able to give Sandra a notepad and say, here's your roster, and no matter what she does, it'd be good, because you've got all these people. Mm-hmm. But I think they overthink it, so...
They do overthink it. And I think, like, WWE, to their credit, I mean, they've been in positions where they've had to change main events and stuff due to injury, and it's gone well, and they've been in those positions and it's gone poorly.
That TLC was good, remember? The where they had the, was it Bray Wyatt and Roman Reigns had the chicken pox?
Yeah. That was really good. I was thinking also when Becky Lynch got her face punched in and they switched it to Ronda versus Charlotte. Yeah. Like, that ended up working out best for everyone, right? So there have been times in the past that it's good. I think because everyone is just so fatigued with WWE right now, they are going to get a lot of shit for what they do. And the problem is, too, when they change main events, it tends to just be Baron Corbin lately. And that's a problem. I think with AEW, what they did was clever. Like, they didn't have Hangman Page versus Page win the what was it, Double or Nothing, the buy-in? What did they call the Battle Royal?
The Casino Royale. Casino Battle Royale.
The Casino, yeah. So they had him win that. And then, so you're still going to get him in the championship picture. And then obviously they had Chris Jericho versus Kenny Omega for the number one contendership also to face Adam Page. And it ended up working out. So I think some of it isn't just like AEW gets concessions and WWE doesn't. I think it's sometimes the execution of that, because no one was complaining when they changed it to Ronda versus Charlotte, you know?
I will say that, what can I say? I think that you are absolutely right. If WWE had a big match and it turned out that the person, one of the people involved, could not be involved anymore in that match, and the other person ended up winning a pre-show battle royal, people would have lost their shit. They would have thrown so much shit at WWE for it. I think the reason AEW gets away with it more is because if AEW succeed, it automatically... Well, it's the best shot at WWE then getting better and then changing their product. So I think a lot of the concessions that other companies get are in the hope that it will give WWE a kick up the arse. But I think you're right. Like, if that same situation, exact same scenario had happened with WWE, there are so many people online who would tear strips off them that wouldn't tear strips off AEW, but I get why they don't, because they, if they do it with AEW, then they're harming a new thing that could ultimately be the beginning of an era of wrestling. I think a lot of people like me who grew up on the Monday Night Wars stuff never thought we were going to get again. So I think that's the reason why a lot of concessions get made.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, so that's it for us. We are going to go off into the podcast sunset. Who should play us out this week, Sandra?
I don't know. I'm trying to think who was actually interesting on these shows. Oh. Should we play Becky Lynch's theme, because it's good and she's awesome? And I kind of like the dynamic between her and Seth Rollins is just funny and quirky to me. Like, I think they're doing well at presenting her. Like, it bugged me that, you know, Baron Corbin, the Dastardly Heel, you know, telling Seth Rollins to go put on an apron and make a sandwich for your man, like, whatever. It's Baron Corbin's a dumbass. Becky's awesome. And I like that Becky still feels like a star in her own right. So let's play her theme, because she's cool.
Okay, let's play Becky Lynch's theme. We'll do the you can do the plugs. First of all, I will say for Inside the Ropes, for the YouTube channel, youtube.com/InsideTheRopes, we do have a new video up today with Paul Heyman talking about that Chicago promo, the CM Punk promo where he came out to his music, talked about how it came about, the whole day building up to it. It's a very interesting video. Somebody in the comments had said, Paul Heyman proving why he's the best in under 7 minutes. So go check that at youtube.com/InsideTheRopes. We're over 84,000 subscribers now. The road to 100 continues. We are aiming to get to 100,000 subscribers by Christmas, so please help us out and give us a subscribe if you don't already. What are the other plugs, Sandra?
Okay, you can find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes is where you get to hear us talk about pay-per-views if you want to hear Kenny and me talk about Stomping Ground, which I think we actually had some pretty interesting discussions on that Stomping Ground review. Like, it might not have been our favorite show, but it led to a lot of really good conversation. So there's that. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. It also helps us, you know, continue to produce the show and continue to be able to do it, which, I mean, like, we're not overhyping that. Without your patronage, we wouldn't be able to do this. So thank you, everyone who's a patron over there. Kenny already said youtube.com/InsideTheRopes for interview content, and go to insidetheropes.co.uk for tickets to live events. An Evening with Awesome Kong tickets are on sale now.
And also, if you live in the UK, there is a brilliant documentary on BBC iPlayer called Underestimate the Girl, on Kate Nash and her music career and how she was big in 2007 and basically had a breakdown, and the road to kind of trying to come back, and it kind of covers a little bit of Glow and stuff, but it's a great documentary. So
I need to check that out. I didn't know that was a thing. I love Kate Nash.
Yes, and you will love her even more after this documentary. And Sandra, of course, when she says she could check it out, she means she'll travel to the UK and watch it on iPlayer legally.
Obviously.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for listening, everybody. Here's Becky Lynch. Bye.
Bye.